Part 3. Criminal Behavior and Records. Prankster, Drunkard, 1974 to 1978. Jeff was an outcast in high school, and by the time he had turned 14 in his freshman year, he started drinking during school hours, bringing whiskey and gin to class in styrofoam cups that he called his medicine. He enjoyed tennis, worked on the school newspaper, and played clarinet in the school band during his junior year, but soon became too inebriated during the day to sustain these activities. He inserted himself into a group of friends which included John Backdurf, the author of the graphic novel My Friend Dahmer. He said, "There was always a darkness about him that was really kind of repellent. He harassed people in malls, ran through school corridors shouting, 'Hurricane warning!' Drew chalk outlines of dead bodies on classroom floors, and embraced being an entertaining loner for the rest of his school career." One classmate said, "The performances were fun to watch, but more than a little frightening, for we were always a little bit wary of him. He was a big guy, and we had the feeling that if he went off, you didn't want to be in the way." Backdurf said, "We were bored stiff and just looking to get through the day. And Jeff was entertainment. He was a little bit dangerous, a little bit unpredictable, and that was fun for us." His friends eerily recall seeing his backyard clubhouse, where he kept pickle jars filled with formaldehyde and animal remains from roadkill that he had picked up. They also noticed his pet cemetery, where he buried the remains of the roadkill that he found, each decorated with a cross made from wood or sticks from the forest, and the animal's skull. During a biology lesson, Dahmer got to dissect a fetal pig, which he enjoyed so much that he asked for permission to take the remains home with him, and the teacher allowed it. He defleshed it and bleached the skull and kept it, which his friends found very strange. One neighborhood friend, Eric Tyson, who Dahmer had sexually experimented with, recalled him being preoccupied with the remains of dead animals, whether they went biking, hiking, or fishing, and said that he found it a bit disturbing. On one occasion, classmate Mike Koslow had asked him if he did not perhaps consider becoming a taxidermist. He said that he had always wanted to do that to a human, which was a chilling response. He was perfecting the tools that he would use to become such a lethal killer, the ability to vanish, the ability to not give anything away and to charm people, the ability to hide everything that was going on inside his head, said Backdurf. His most haunting question is, where were the adults? They didn't care. They just pushed him along and figured, well, next year he'll be somebody else's problem. And of course, he was somebody else's problem. Driving ticket, June 19th, 1978. Dahmer got a ticket from police officers for driving left of center after passing a drunk test and convincing officers that the trash bags in the back of his car were nothing to be suspicious about, even though they contained the severed remains of Stephen Hicks. When asked about the trash bags, he said that he was taking a drive to the dump to escape his parents, who were going through a terrible divorce. The officers sympathized with the young man and let him go without searching his car. If they had, it would have been the end of him, but he managed to get away with only a $20 ticket, which he gladly accepted. Drunk and disorderly, August to December 1978. After just 3 months at college, Jeff was expelled from Ohio State University for poor performance, excessive drinking, and allegedly stealing from other students. Once he arrived home, his father tried to wean him off alcohol unsuccessfully. He dropped him off at an employment services office in hopes that he would find a job, but Jeff found his way to a bar instead, and was arrested on drunk and disorderly charges later that day. U.S. Army, December 1979 to March 1981. During Dahmer's time at the Army, January 1979 to March 1981, he raped, tortured, and assaulted at least two officers. but did not ever receive any charges for this. Bill Joe Capshaw was so traumatized by the 17-month blur of abuse from Dahmer that he spent 5 years locked in his bedroom when he returned to Arkansas, which was followed by more than 25 years of therapy. He only shared his experience after his father died, saying, "I could not say I was raped. I could not do that to my dad. He fought in the Pacific." When Capshaw went to the military doctors with complaints of rape, they used a rape test kit to verify his accusations, but threw him to the dogs by simply discarding the kit and his results. He also revealed that Dahmer was caught by military policemen masturbating in a park in front of children who were swimming. His military file reflects that he received counseling for his alcohol abuse on the 8th of August 1980, the 11th of August 1980, the 2nd of September 1980, the 8th of December 1980, the 23rd of December 1980, the 7th of March 1981, and the 9th of March 1981. He was enrolled in an alcoholic rehabilitation program from the 5th of February 1981, but refused treatment. He was discharged on the 26th of March 1981, receiving an honorable discharge. There is much speculation about the unsolved murder cases in proximity to Baumholder, Germany, while Dahmer was stationed there. The lead prosecutor, E. Michael McCann, said in his final trial, "Don't be fooled by him. He fooled the police in Bath, Ohio. He fooled the West Allis police. He fooled the Milwaukee police. He's fooled a lot of people, including the court, who gave him probation for sexual assault." Target practice, January 23, 1982. On the 23rd of January 1982, shortly after arriving to live with his grandmother, Dahmer bought a Colt Lawman 357 revolver for $350 to use for target practice, which is not a crime, but could be considered a criminal red flag. In the army, he particularly enjoyed riflery and wanted to continue to practice the skill that he had picked up. His aunt Eunice, Lionel's sister, often visited at the grandmother's house, and when she learned of Jeffrey's gun, called Lionel to tell him about it. On his next visit, the gun was taken from Jeff and was sold back in Ohio. Eunice was also very suspicious of the smell coming from the basement and got Lionel to investigate it. When he noticed a foul-smelling spot of black liquid on the floor, Jeff told him that he had recently dissected a raccoon, which was the reason for it. It was, in fact, the liquefied remains of one of his victims. Lionel also checked the trash bags with Jeff and saw some sludge-like remains in them, but accepted Jeff's reasoning that he was still just dissecting roadkill. The remains were so chopped up and decomposed that Lionel said nobody could have known that they were human. Indecent exposure, August 8, 1982. On Sunday, August 8, 1982, Dahmer was arrested and convicted for indecent exposure at the Wisconsin State Fair, where he exposed himself to a group of 25 women and young children. He was fined $50 and got a criminal record. Disorderly conduct, indecent exposure, August 1986. In August of 1986, Dahmer was arrested for masturbating in front of two 12-year-old boys on the bank of the Kinnikinnick River. He told officers that he had done it 5 times before in the same month. He told his parole officer that the incident was merely a case of him drinking too much beer and needing to urinate. This demonstrates how different he was around people who seemed to care about him, where a small sense of guilt or shame made him turn the story into one where he was wrongly accused or possibly the victim of unfair treatment. On the 10th of March 1987, he was charged with disorderly conduct, receiving 1 year probation and instructions to see a counselor. Bathhouses, 1986 to 1987. On the 9th of August 1986, Dahmer was arrested and charged with lewd and lascivious behavior. for drugging his bathhouse dates until one was taken to hospital for a suspected overdose. He was banned from returning to the bathhouses and had to move on to perusing gay bars and clubs in downtown Milwaukee instead. Robbery and assault, April 1988. On the 3rd of April, 1988, Ronald Flowers woke up in a hospital after being drugged by Dahmer, noticing that his underwear was turned inside out and money was missing from his wallet. He reported Dahmer to the police for assault and robbery, and on April 6, 1988, Milwaukee police officers went to investigate him. Detective Don Yockey said, "He seemed normal. He wasn't hesitant. I felt there was no problem, and I believed his story." Officers dropped all charges against Dahmer, telling Flowers that it was his word against Dahmer's. After his capture in 1991, Dahmer confessed that the only reason that he had not killed Flowers was because his grandmother had seen them together. Enticing a minor for wrongful purposes, January 30, 1989. Dahmer moved out of his grandmother's house and into an apartment at address 808 North 24th Street, which was only a few blocks from the infamous apartment 213 he would be captured in 1991. On Sunday, September 25th, 1989, he approached 13-year-old Somsak Synthasymphone, a petite Oriental boy, and offered him money to return to his apartment for photographs. While he hesitated at first, Dahmer managed to convince the boy that he could trust him, and that it would not be anything that would make him uncomfortable. Somsak agreed, and the pair returned to the apartment, where Dahmer prepared him a drugged drink of coffee and Bailey's Irish Cream. He started fondling him, kissing him, and getting his camera ready for a photo shoot, but Somsak felt uncomfortable and somehow managed to escape the apartment, running approximately 3 miles to get home to his parents before the drugs really took effect. Once there, he was mumbling and stumbling, and his parents rushed him to hospital, suspecting that he had been drugged or that something was wrong with him. When they had worn off, Somsak told his parents the details of the man who drugged him and remembered exactly where his apartment was, assisting them with information to file an official police report. The matter was investigated, and Dahmer was found guilty of the accusations. He told detectives in 1991 that he was terrified that he would be found guilty of murder on this occasion too, because he had Anthony Sears' skull under a towel in his apartment, but that the cops were so focused on finding drugs and photographs that they completely missed it. On January 30, 1989, after pleading guilty, he was sentenced at the Circuit Court of Milwaukee County to a 1-year work release program, followed by 5 years of probation for second-degree sexual assault on a minor and enticing a minor for wrongful purposes. He also had to register as a sex offender. Once in prison, Dahmer befriended a fellow inmate who helped him write a letter to Judge Gardner to request a shortened sentence. While Dahmer wrote the letter himself, he credited the inmate for assisting him to say all the right things. He was released 2 months early and started his 5-year probation in March of 1990. False police report, July 3, 1991. On July the 3rd, Dahmer called the Milwaukee Police Department to falsely report that his wallet had been stolen to give the Ambrosia Chocolate Company a reason for being absent at work. He had, in fact, killed Matt Turner on June the 30th, so it is most probable that he needed the time to dismember and discard of this victim and could not fulfill his duties. He was fired on July 7, 1991, for excessive absenteeism and poor performance, with his contract terminating officially on July 13, 1991.